As we do on Monday mornings, we thought we'd ask Marcus Mabry, who's been our guest in reaction to the speech all morning long, international business editor for the New York Times, to see if this speech and some of the interesting themes that were developed in this speech sort of changes the agenda, maybe changes the message from what we were talking about at the beginning of this week, which was the bankruptcy of General Motors. Is this the message changer, Marcus Mabry?
Well, I would say I take the easy way out and say temporarily. Absolutely. The fact is, what the news will be dominated by for the rest of this week and through the weekend will be a reaction to the speech from around the world, and not just from the Arab world, as well as we haven't really heard from Israelis yet. We'll be hearing a lot from what Israelis think. We'll also be hearing a lot from the Republican opposition, which I think will probably say some of this stuff was a little too conciliatory. And then the rest of the week will also be dominated by tomorrow's monthly jobless numbers.
And we already have some positive numbers. The weekly jobless claims were down. The total number of new filings were down for the first time in 20 weeks. Are we at the bottom of a trend? Unclear. We'll certainly get the other indicator at the end of the week when we get the monthly numbers. But give us a sense of what this tone in Barack Obama's speech to so-called the Muslim world, but does to a domestic audience here.
There must be a sustained effort to listen to each other, to learn from each other, to respect one another, and to seek common ground. As the Holy Quran tells us, be conscious of God and speak always the truth.
Sounds like a bumper sticker.
Well, you know, this is the power of this particular politician, this Obama, this biracial American president, his power to look at both sides, his power to even disarm opponents to some extent by letting them hear that he understands their arguments and their voices. This is a guy who is all about conciliation. He's about bringing together supposedly opposing sides, as he has in his own personal
life. And it's a complex interweaving. I mean, he goes off to Buchenwald, something he referred to in his speech, which is an explicit sort of reference to Israeli concerns about their sensitivities being taken into consideration in the Arab-Israeli conflict. And plus, he's got the D-Day anniversary in Europe. What's that going to mean?
It's going to be, you know, we heard this historical resonance in what he said. And it was interesting because Rami Kouria, who's one of the great intellectuals in Lebanon.
Beirut Star editor who spoke on this program earlier this morning.
And recently, and he said the speech was pedantic. That was the negative word he used about it. And I agree with him. There were parts that were so professorial where he was kind of lecturing and presenting things somewhat simplistically, a critic might say, with a certain American naivete about how things could evolve in the Middle East. But he did draw on history a lot here, as any professor would, and he's going to be doing that again when he gets to Europe, connecting America's past, America's triumphs over oppression, especially Nazi oppression, which obviously he talked about at some length this morning, addressed really to the ridiculousness of Holocaust denialism. But he will also be connecting that to America's promise today, not just to our country, but to the world. That's what he's going to be doing this week.
One of the things that Rami Kouria took umbrage of in the speech was President Obama's reference to 9/11. But I'm wondering if that doesn't inoculate him in some way against some American criticism. And as evidence of this, I present to you that just minutes after the jobs report is out, I have an email in my inbox from the Republican National Committee research arm, which is the opposition research, saying, where are the jobs? And it's an attack on the unemployment numbers. We have been finished with a speech for more than 2 hours and still no response from the Republican Party. Makes me think, and I'm wondering if you agree, that the Republicans aren't sure how to react to this speech.
I think you're exactly right. Until the last administration, there was a real kind of, since the end of World War II, a consensus in Washington that whatever differences Americans had, they stopped at the water's edge. Now, there were certainly differences of opinion over the years over foreign policy, but they were really exacerbated and exaggerated to an extent we had not seen in generations in the Bush administration. I think the Republicans are reacting to that. They don't want to seem like they're just poking the president gratuitously.
My sense is they're terrified to actually go near it. I think they don't want to be any part of this sort of thing. But I'm wondering if there was a way for them to react, it would be in this particular domain. Marcus, listen to this.
It is agonizing for America to lose our young men and women. It is costly and politically difficult to continue this conflict. We would gladly bring every single one of our troops home if we could be confident that there were not violent extremists in Afghanistan and now Pakistan determined to kill as many Americans as they possibly can. But that is not yet the case.
Marcus Mabry, when does this sort of abstract recounting of America's need to be in these hotspots, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iraq, become a real war issue for Americans? When are the troops coming home, and when can we stop paying for these wars?
Well, it's interesting because I think that line was actually directed to Americans more than to anyone else. And it was saying to us that we can't come home. We can't stop spending these trillions of dollars until we know that we will be safe. And, of course, one could argue that that day will never come, a day where we can be certain we'll be safe. And what he was arguing for is how much he's going to continue to spend in Afghanistan, however much we can draw down in Iraq.
At the beginning of the week, and we were just talking about GM, these new job numbers, do you think that they're going to sort of help sort of do what the president wants, which is sort of get the economy off the table, or is there just not enough good economic news to really change the subject?
Well, you know, we've been seeing this tug of war between the bears and the bulls, between positive economic signs of quote-unquote green shoots of recovery and negative economic signs. For instance, tomorrow we'll probably see a number of, 550, probably 600,000 Americans who are still losing their jobs, new people unemployed. This tug of war will continue. I don't think these numbers will be enough to say that we've bottomed out and we're going upward. We don't know when that point is going to come. Frankly, we don't know what signs there will be to know for sure we've reached bottom. But I think right now that tug of war is going to continue, and the answer is not yet given.
Although, the conspiratorial scenario is the White House called up the Department of Labor and said, just tell us what the unemployment numbers are, and it will be safe. And if they're positive, then we can leave for Cairo. And if they're not, so it looks like he's definitely got a blip.
I can say with definitiveness, this trip was planned long before.
Yeah, well, you never know. You never call us off. Call us off, Cairo. All right. Finally, we are so used to hearing really, really bad news. Does Barack Obama have a benefit that even if it is pretty miserable on Friday, he can still say, steady as she goes, things aren't coming off the rails here?
Oh, I think so. The expectation is such that Americans don't expect things are going to be. We're going to see a low number tomorrow. So I think he benefits from that. I think the curse for Barack Obama, and this is true both in foreign policy after what was generally conceived to be a very good speech today, and also true in the economic numbers, the curse of rising expectations. The problem is there will become a point when people expect things to be improving in both those realms, and if they're not, then he's going to have a price to pay.
White House is sort of, that's my takeaway, praying for low expectations to continue. That's their cover.
It's the Obama
for a
way.
While.
They've tried to do it in the past. Absolutely. Talk things down.
Marcus Mabry, that's sort of the mini agenda midweek here. New York Times International Business Editor. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.